Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Alan Lichtman, a distinguished professor of history at American University, who has correctly predicted the outcome of every presidential election since 1984. We will discuss the latest Republican-leaning polls that show the president ahead, as well as the likelihood of wildcards upsetting Obama's path to re-election. Then we'll examine the reasons why Chicago's teachers have gone out on strike with Kevin Kamashiro, who is a professor and past chair of the Department of Educational Policy Studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. We will discuss his contention that Chicago's teachers are not striking because of money, but rather are protesting so-called reforms that have made their jobs nearly impossible. Then finally, we will speak with George Grayson, the author of Mexican Messiah, Andres Manuel López Obrador, about the resignation of the PRD's presidential candidate who is still contesting the last two presidential elections in Mexico. We will discuss whether López Obrador's exit from the Democratic Revolution Party to form a new political youth movement called Morena, the National Regeneration Movement, will divide and weaken Mexico's left. And joining us now is Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University. He studied both the American right and the presidency, and his books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, a surefire way to predicting the next president. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. Welcome to Background Briefing, Alan Lichtman.
Thank you, Ian.
And it looks like you're doing it again. You're getting it right here, Alan, because clearly President Obama got a substantial bounce from the convention, and Romney didn't get much of a bounce at all. And both the Gallup and the Rasmussen reports, both of which tend to favor Republican results over Democratic results, now show Obama leading Romney by 5 points on Gallup and 4 points on Rasmussen. So I imagine that there may be some premature elation going on at the White House.
Well, you know, as Yogi Berra once said, it ain't over till it's over. This election is not decided, of course, by the post-convention polls, although even better news for Obama, you mentioned the Rasmussen poll. It's now up to 5%. So all of the polls that have been out to this point do have Obama with a fairly solid, consistent 5% lead. And today's Ohio poll also has him up 5 points. In terms of the Electoral College, some of these swing state polls may be more important than the national polls. But as you know, the keys to the White House, my forecasting system that's hit 7 out of 7 of the past elections ahead of time, not retrospectively, doesn't even look at polls. In fact, I'm famous for saying, forget the polls, forget the pundits, look at the big picture. And I've been arguing since January 2010, I just dated myself, that despite the sour economy, that's only one factor. That when you look at the bigger picture, it strongly favors Obama's reelection. He's the sitting president. He's not challenged in his own party. He doesn't have a party split with a third-party challenger. He's achieved major policy change. He's had a big foreign policy success. He hasn't had a foreign policy disaster. Despite the hard economy, the country is not dissolved into social unrest. These big picture factors have been favoring Obama for a long time, and I think the Democrats finally got it in that they did something the Republicans didn't do at their convention. They talked about foreign affairs. They talked about America's place in the world, which is important and not irrelevant. Just because the Republicans aren't talking about it doesn't make it irrelevant. In fact, that shows why it is important. For decades, the Republicans have been pounding the Democrats on foreign and national security issues. Now they don't because the Obama record doesn't give them an opening.
Well, Alan Lichtman, there's been a complete reversal. The Republicans always owned national security, and the Democrats were always playing catch-up and apologizing for not being soft on the communists or soft on the terrorists.
The terrorists, right.
And conversely, the Democrats, who in Bill Clinton's case came up with the "it's the economy, stupid," that's now become Romney's entire campaign.
It's his only issue. his only issue now, he's down to being a one-issue candidate, is hard times are bad, therefore you need to change. He hasn't told us what he's going to do to fix the economy. Time and time again, he's been queried about his specific plans, and beyond tax cuts for the upper brackets and deregulation, which the Democrats have correctly said are the policies that got us here in the first place, he has no particular plans for fixing the economy, and the American people recognize that. He's even backed off some of his criticisms of the Obama health care program, saying, you know, well, maybe some parts of it, like those parts relating to pre-existing conditions, are pretty good. Of course, his right-wing base then practically revolted, and he had to eat his words. But kind of the emptiness of the Romney campaign was signified on Sunday when he was asked, all right, what tax loopholes are you going to close? He said, I'm going to close tax loopholes, so even though I am going to cut taxes on the upper brackets, they'll still be paying the same. He couldn't come up with one. Couldn't come up with a single example of a single tax break that he was going to eliminate. Look, if you're going to make a case, and there's a case to be made, as to why we have to change, it's not good enough simply to say things are tough. You've got to fit in the other half of the walnut, and that is, what are you going to do to make them better, and why should we believe you?
Again, I'm speaking with Alan Lichtman, who is a distinguished professor of history at American University. He studied both the American right and the presidency, and his books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. Now, in terms of White Protestant Nation, Alan, what's happening to white Protestants? You've got a black man running, a Mormon running,
yes,
and two Catholics as VPs, and then you've got zero white Protestants on the Supreme Court. Something's happening.
Something is happening. This, of course, is the first time in the history of the Republic that there isn't a white Protestant on either major party ticket. That's absolutely extraordinary. And here's what's happening is white Protestant Nation is shrinking. We are becoming a nation of minorities. Texas is already a majority minority state, for example. It's 55% minority. Sometime in the next 20 years, Texas will turn purple once Latinos start voting. You know, Latinos, African Americans, Asian Americans are going to eventually, when they start voting, either dominate or certainly be competitive in Texas. If the Republicans can't have Texas, there's no electoral college map for them that wins for them. So I think over time, as white Protestants become a shrinking part of the American population and the American electorate, that makes it much more difficult for the Republican Party, which is now the repository of conservatism. That wasn't true for many decades in the early 20th century when there was plenty of conservatism among Southern Democrats, but they're gone. And so to depend upon white Protestants is very tenuous politically, and Republicans, if anything, have lost ground, not gained grounds with minorities. There was one extraordinary poll. I'm not saying it's accurate, but it's emblematic of Republican problems with minorities that had Romney getting 0% of the African-American vote. This is why you see all these voter suppression measures, voter ID laws, restricting early voting, purging the rolls, making it more difficult to register, because Republicans realize they can't expand their base, so they're trying to shrink the opposition base.
Well, but the asymmetry, Alan Lichtman, is that the white Protestants, they may be on the way out, but they're all going to show up and vote. I mean, there are 10 million eligible Latinos who haven't registered to vote.
And that's correct.
And we know that the young vote that came out in 2008 in a huge wave for Obama seems to be completely disengaged this time around. And you'd think that given the pernicious nature of the voter suppression that's going on the Republican side, at least that would motivate both the Latinos and the young to come out and vote. But it's not.
Well, we'll see. I'm not so sure that's true. The Latino issue on voting is a long-term structural one. A lot of Latinos are just becoming citizens. They're just getting used to being in the American political system. And it's not a constituency that's very well mobilized as yet. That's why I'm talking 20 years down the road for that constituency to be mobilized. And, of course, young people have always been the group that has the lowest voter turnout. Nonetheless, and voter suppression is obviously aimed at the more marginal peoples who tend to be Democrat. Nonetheless, you can only hold off these trends so long.
So what is your surefire prediction here for how things are going to pan out? As we started out, at the moment, things are looking good for Obama, and apparently the Romney team are kind of nervous, and they've just sort of sent a memo to themselves trying to buck up their spirits and say that we're not going to lose. So if we're already talking about not losing, then somebody saying that you are going to lose. I mean, it's not exactly the best situation to be in, but things could change. I don't know that they'll change with the first debate on October the 3rd, which is going to be on domestic policy. What do you think?
The keys don't change. The keys are the big picture. The keys are things like the economy, foreign policy successes and failures, social unrest, scandal, policy change, third parties. These don't change. And the keys have not really changed since I made my first prediction that Obama would be reelected in the International Journal of Information Systems in January 2010, more than 2.5 years ago. And the picture has not shifted at all despite all the politicking. The message of the keys is keep your eye on the big picture and don't be swayed by the day-to-day events. That's like looking at the froth on the wave when the tides are really deciding what's going on here. And the tides of politics have long called for and predicted an Obama victory despite the economy, because the economy isn't the only thing. Except for the economy, virtually every other factor that decides presidential elections goes in favor of Obama. And this is a nonpartisan system. This system has been right since 1984, 7 elections, and it has predicted about as many Republican as Democratic victories.
So, but obviously there are wild cards. So you mentioned scandal and foreign policy disasters. There's, of course, a persistent rumor, particularly buzzing in the Israeli press, that Netanyahu's determined to attack Iran and might well do so before the election. It looks like Obama dodged a bullet on the euro crashing.
Yes.
The ECB stepped up and is buying Spanish and Italian debt, even though the Germans are furious. That's probably going to delay the reckoning of the euro until after the election. And, you know, you can't discount the enormous amounts of money that the Republicans have at their disposal, a lot of which is anonymous. They can, you know, a billionaire can write a check for $1 billion.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a huge loophole in our political system. But there's nothing we can do about it without either a very different Supreme Court or amending the Constitution. We've got to live with that. There is no money key in the keys to the White House. Lots of candidates on the losing side of money have done very well. Franklin Roosevelt, when he got 60% of the vote in 46 out of 48 states in 1936, was soundly outspent by a guy we don't remember anymore, his Republican opponent, Alf Landon. The amount of money this time may make a difference. I mean, you know, the keys are based on historical patterns, and if the money gets great enough to break those patterns, things can get a little more unpredictable. But so far, historically, money has not decided presidential elections. You can buy other elections, mind you, but not presidential elections, for the simple reason that, you know, people don't know who this senator or congressman is, but everyone knows who's running for president. They get their message out. They have the conventions. They have the debates. People know who they are and basically, at least in broad strokes, know what they stand for. So it's very hard for money to turn an election. And it's not like the Democrats are broke. I just saw the statistic today that for the first time in a while, Obama in August actually outraised Romney. So Romney will have the money advantage because of the super PACs, but I don't think that's going to turn the election. That would only turn the election possibly if we had a repeat of 2000, you know, almost a tied popular vote and maybe one or two critical states decided by a few thousand votes. That's when you could see the voter suppression combined with the money making a difference.
Well, specifically, the Obama and Democratic Party raked in August $114 million compared to Romney's $111 million. But again, the enormous amount of advantage that the Republicans have with super PACs, and particularly with these 501c4 social welfare, believe it or not, PACs,
exactly.
where donors don't have to reveal who they are, and we don't know the extent to which corporate America, there's no question that corporate America is behind Romney. He's their guy, but we just don't know how much money they're pouring in. We do know that people like the Kochs and also Karl Rove are pouring enormous amounts of money into House and Senate races. So that seems to be, because we're so focused on the presidential race, my suspicion is that the Republicans will pick up more House seats and even more Senate seats, just based on money, not
It's possible. Money does make a difference in House and Senate elections. I haven't looked at, you know, the district by district, but I would be surprised if the Democrats took back the House. That's going to be very, very difficult, especially given the advantages Republicans have had in redistricting places like Pennsylvania and Texas. I think the Senate's going to be very close. You know, it could come down to Missouri, whether Todd Akin has put his foot so deeply in his mouth that he's going to choke on it through the election. That's not entirely clear, given the big Republican advantage in Missouri.
Well, what about, though, a foreign policy wild card? I've had some very interesting interviews with some fairly high-ranking people from the G.W. Bush administration who suggested that Netanyahu had actually come to the conclusion that Obama was going to win and would attack Iran just before the elections, but not, you know, to help his friend Romney, but to actually own Obama and lock him in to a policy that obviously Obama doesn't want to be a part of. But
I think there's some truth to that. I don't think an invasion, you know, in the days or weeks before the election will help Romney at all. It might actually help Obama for the simple reason that whenever there is a major foreign policy crisis, there is always kind of a rally around the flag effect, a rally around the leader. It's only over time when the policies, as they so often do, go sour, that there's a turn away from them. But the short-term effect is usually quite positive for the American president.
So is there anything that we're not thinking of here in terms of the wild cards? You've got the keys.
No, I don't think there's anything. The keys don't change. The only time in American history that the keys have changed this late in an election, you got to go back to 1864, the middle of the Civil War, rather unique situation, when Union victories, Sherman taking Atlanta, Grant's victories in Virginia, Sheridan's victories, did turn the situation around and did change some keys. But, you know, you got to go back 150 years and a Civil War to have anything like that. So, no, keys don't change late. And the way the system works, it's very hard for keys to change late. It would have to be, you know, a wartime situation or, as you say, something horrifically happening around the world.
But still, you've given us the caveat of money. Money has not been a part of the keys, and we are now in an entirely different money environment, are we not, with Citizens United and these 501c4 super PACs where donors don't have to reveal who they are, which I find deeply ironic given the voter suppression where people who want to vote Democrat have to prove who they are.
Right. Well, of course, we've had situations in the past before modern disclosure rules when no one knew who the donors were. That's, you know, a modern, you know, late 20th century kind of innovation. They had very loose disclosure laws before that, but, you know, a lot of campaign contributions, if we recall Watergate, for example, all that cash that was flowing, were not disclosed. I agree with you. This is a new thing, but there are always new things. You know, in 2008, people were telling me, your keys aren't going to work because we've never had an African-American nominee before. You know, so there are always new things. They're always changing. The keys, at least retrospectively, are based on elections since 1860 when, you know, women didn't vote. African Americans didn't vote. My ancestors from Eastern Europe weren't here yet. Latinos weren't here yet. There was no television, no polls, no jet planes, no prop planes, no automobiles. So the keys are what we call a robust system. They've held up through enormous changes in our politics, in our electoral system, in our economy, in our society. That's why I never change the keys based on something that seems to be new and unique to an individual election.
Well, Alan Lichtman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Ian, it's been great fun.
Again, I've been speaking with Alan Lichtman, who's a distinguished professor of history at American University. He studied both the American right and the presidency, and his books include White Protestant Nation, The Rise of the American Conservative Movement, and The Keys to the White House, A Surefire Way to Predicting the Next President. His prediction system has correctly predicted the outcomes of all U.S. presidential elections since 1984. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll go to Chicago to talk about the teacher strike.